Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:14 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is February 12th. Well, today the vast majority of markets were in positive territory, with the Dow bouncing about 410 points. And if we look at it on the weekly charts for a significant number of those Wall Street indices, the vast majority have bounced from the region of their respective trend means. And also you've had the 10% decline, so people are starting to think about buying the dip. The problem, and something that I've been rather worried about, is that there has been a certain amount of bearishness, but I've seen so many institutional reports that say buy the dip. Everyone is saying buy the dip. And when we look at the VIX index, people are giving us plenty of evidence that they are buying the dip here, but also that volatility is unlikely to get back down to those lows. The most important point here is that when you look at the VIX, it got up to 50. It's been up to 50 about four times in the last 7 years, and obviously there was the one big exception in 2008 when it went up to almost 90. But it's, generally speaking, a better indicator of market lows than it is of market peaks. And when you get elevated levels, it's generally an indication that we have a low of at least near-term significance. So how do we reconcile these two points? On the one hand, you have a lot of people who are saying buy the dip. And that's because buying the dip is the most reliable strategy in a medium-term bull market. If you'd bought the dip anywhere along the line from 2009, you made money. So therefore, people are jumping in here and they're willing to buy. On the other hand, if volatility is not going to go right back down to those 10 and sub-10 levels that we've seen for the last 2 years, well, we can anticipate then that the action is going to be more volatile than we've seen over those last 2 years. And what that is likely to contribute to is ranging, that we could have a rangy environment overall, which will largely, I think, take the form of a medium-term pause within an overall environment. Now, the bigger question then is what's going to happen with government bonds over the balance of this year. And that's an important characteristic, I think, because when we look at exactly what it is that's going on in the bond markets, it is playing out over a very lengthy period of time. And bond yields have been in a base formation for much of the last 6 years. They're towards the upper side of that base formation now. And that 3% level represented an important area of support back in 2013 when we had the taper tantrum. Back then, many of the same things that people were worried about with regard to the bond market, such as the Federal Reserve removing stimulus too quickly, are equally true today. But of course, we are an additional 5 years into the economic recovery, and we have the added question about the fiscal condition of the US government, because they are about to engage in a massive fiscal stimulus at a time when the economy has been growing for a considerable period of time, when unemployment is already at record lows, and when we already have a stock market that's been doing very well for a long time. So that does represent an area of uncertainty. And when we think about the relative valuations of the stock market, some people will say, well, the S&P 500 has come back to about 16 on the PE basis, and that is an attractive level, so that is a further rationale for buying the dip. And others will say, well, that's only relative to bond yields that are still below 3%. So a lot of people are looking at compare and contrast measures, looking at the performance of the bond market versus to the equity market. And what that also suggests is that we have a period now where, following the rather large declines that we saw last week, that sentiment has taken a blow and that it is going to take time to convalesce. So even the banking sector pulled back sharply, and it is exhibiting relative strength in here, and it's a classic cyclical sector. And of course, it also benefits from higher interest rates. So that is, I think, an additional sign that we are getting a return to performance of cyclicals, and that some of the most overextended sectors are likely to experience some mean reversion, or at least ranging. Boeing was in positive territory in here today and continues to hold in a range following what was a very accelerated advance over the course of the last few months. And if all it does is ranges, then that is, I think, perhaps the best possible scenario for an overextension of this magnitude, considering the extent of the acceleration that we've had. Meanwhile, when we look at, for example, the resources sector, then it was in positive territory in here today, with the industrial metals beginning to bounce. And for the FTSE 350 index, this represents the region of the upper side of the underlying range and the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's a natural area where one could anticipate that support would be coming back in here. And as long as that $3 area is holding in copper, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional higher to lateral ranging. Then this was also a reasonably positive day in the biotechnology sector, which again is, I think, one of the more cyclical sectors in the technology environment generally. And when we look at that on a daily basis, that was a substantial rally off the lows on Friday, and would suggest that we're this is the beginning of support building in here right now. So obviously there was a great deal of stress in the stock market last week, and we're getting a little bit of steadying in here this week. But oil prices, for example, were not able to hold their rally in here today, and in fact finished in negative territory. And that was perhaps one of the most telling declines last week, that it completely broke the consistency of the advance since June. Now the bigger question is whether the $60 area is going to hold. That represents the region of the trend mean. If it cannot hold $60, then we will have outright confirmation that $70 is the upper side of what is potentially going to be a very long-term range. And we know that a great deal of additional supply becomes economic around $70 because of the fact that some of the wildcatters and smaller shale oil producers were confident enough to raise dividends just in the last couple of weeks because they're flush with cash, with prices around the $70 area. And when we look at the commodities curve, then you can still hedge right now for around $60 out to the end of this year. But if we were thinking about this just 2 or 3 weeks ago, then you would have been able to hedge out to 2 years for about $70. And that's a significant period of time that these unconventional suppliers could hedge out to. And we can be sure that that is exactly what they were engaged in. So what that suggests is that we are going to be in for a more volatile time in the energy markets. And the best case scenario is that it finds support in the region of $60 and ranges. But when we look at it in those terms, then that's the hard edge of technological innovation, that it is that we are getting technological innovation that is contributing to deflationary forces, most particularly in the energy sector, because of unconventional supply, which is much more elastic to prices than conventional supply. And then, of course, you have billions of dollars being poured into research and development for energy storage solutions, as well as both wind and solar. So these are evolving themes that are likely to contribute to a more volatile environment for the oil market. And when the Saudi Aramco IPO has eventually gone through, then what incentive will the main OPEC producers have to continue to restrict their supply when there is ample additional supply coming from unconventional sources that could quite easily help to keep prices below $70 for longer? So that would suggest that the oil market is going to be in for a more difficult period. Then when we look at the precious metals, the gold price was in mildly positive territory in here today. And so far, this reaction has been relatively contained. it was liable to have some pause around the $1,350 area because it represents the upper side of the 18-month range, and it did rather race to get up to those levels. But so far, it has steadied above $1,300, and as long as it is steadying in that $50 range, then I think that the benefit of the doubt can probably be given to the potential for an upward break in gold prices later in the year. Platinum today firmed from the region of the trend mean. It pulled back again from that $1,000 area, and so far it has steadied around this $970 area. As long as it can hold the region of the trend mean, then I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt that it is going to be able to sustain a move above that psychological $1,000 level at some point later this year. Then when we look at some of the additional stock market indices. Europe also pulled back by 10%, but it was not 10% overextended relative to the trend mean, so it is now trading below the trend mean, and it does need to rally more impressively than it did today. It was up about 1%, but it needs to do more than that. It needs to rally on consecutive days to confirm support in the region of 370 for the Eurostox index, and it needs to push back above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. The simple fact of the matter is that the ECB is tapering its quantitative program, and that has been one of the tailwinds behind the euro, and the euro was a little bit firmer in here today. But the broader picture is that when we look at, for example, the Italian 10-year bond, it is at really quite low levels, and the spread over bunds is at I think it's almost decade long narrows. So that appears to be a situation that is unlikely to be sustained. When we think about the fact that Europe has got a number of populist governments that have come into power in the East, then you have the potential for a populist government to come in to power in Italy, then you have the ECB that's tapering, and you have a German government that may be a coalition and may have sustained the status quo, but there is still a large degree of uncertainty about the leeway that that administration is going to have in negotiating or renegotiating treaties or new ways of dealing with the absence of clear signs that governance is improving in the Eurozone. That's a significant issue. When we look around the world and think about the question of whether governance is improving or declining, well, the places where governance is improving, it's generally are generally in the emerging markets, and I think it is we would have to be hard pressed to conclude that governance is improving in Europe or indeed in the USA. So that is I think a significant question that is overhanging some of these markets. It looks to be almost a surety that at some point the spread on sovereign peripheral debt in the Eurozone is going to start widening out again, and that's likely to represent a headwind for the stock markets, and I think that that is why those stock markets are underperforming on both an absolute and relative basis. Then when we look at, for example, the FTSE 100, it has come back to that 7,000 level, and it's steadied in here today. 7,000 represents the upper side of that very long-term range, and as long as the 7,000 level holds, then we can conclude that this very internationally oriented index is in a new period of secular advance. So we're back at an interesting level for a significant number of those FTSE 100 companies, and it will be a testament to the strength of the global expansion, but also the nature of how much the pound is going to rally, that will dictate whether it can hold at 7,000 level or not. The pound was really quite overextended when it got up to that peak at around 143 against the US dollar. It's down now to 138, so it has unwound a good portion of that overbought condition, and it still has a fair way to unwind its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. So I think the most likely scenario is that we get some ranging. But when we look at this general trend, the pound has been appreciating since the end of 2016. There is still a great deal of debate about exactly what we can expect from the Brexit negotiations. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, I think that that is amply demonstrated by the volatility of the range, that every time the pound has got up towards 114 and has failed, it is now back towards the lower side of that range, and it will need to hold the 112 area. A break below 112 by the pound against the euro would suggest that enthusiasm about the UK getting a better deal than has been originally priced in will be fading. So this is an important area to question whether the pound is going to start bouncing from here. Then when we look at what's going on in Asia, well, India was overbought and it has now unwound most of its overbought condition and it was bouncing in here today. And then when we look at China, it is a rather a contrast because the Hang Seng was in negative territory today. Now, the chances are that with a more positive environment on Wall Street today, we should start to see some of that short-term oversold condition getting unwound in the Hang Seng. But this is by far the largest pullback we've seen in quite some time. It's also from the region of an historic peak. So I don't think it would be unreasonable to expect that we at least get some ranging by the Hang Seng in this area of around 30,000, but it will need to start bouncing to confirm a low of more than short-term significance in here. Then when we think about the very simple point is that Wall Street had a larger pullback because of all the short volatility trades and because of rising interest rates. And Europe has had these governance questions, and it has been lagging for most of the last year already. Whereas it is still Asia is the growth engine, and it wasn't subject to nearly the same kind of selling pressure because that's not where a lot of the leveraged positions have been focused. So it does point towards Asia perhaps leading out of this corrective phase and being less influenced overall by what is likely to be a rotation on Wall Street. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.